gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count.
Hello, fantasy football fans, and welcome to the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. I am your host, Chris Mitchell. It is Thursday afternoon, and if it is Thursday, that means we're talking daily fantasy football here. It is week number 3. We started our yearly or weekly program here last week with Ricky Sanders from DailyRoto.com, and he's coming on again here today. He helped me cash in our in the league, and I can't thank him enough for that. I took his players directly. I applied a little bit of my own little seasoning. I added my ingredients like he suggested. Now, Ricky is as good, if not the best, out there in the business. I'm not kissing his ass for the sake of kissing his ass, because that accomplishes nothing for me. Not only does it make me want to throw up, but it doesn't actually accomplish me anything. He's not paying me any money to say good things about him. But the fact is that I took his advice, and then he also tells us. So not only does he give us the players that he really likes going into the week and good reasons why, but he also gives you some strategies where you can put your own thinking into place. For example, he said James White looked like a must-start. Then all of a sudden, as the weekend came along, it looked like Rex Burkhead and Sony Michel were both going to play. And one of the things that Ricky said on the podcast on Thursday, even though by the, we didn't know until Sunday what the status of these players were going to be, he said, if James White is the lone back, he's a must-start. If he's not, then the value changes. Now, as it turns out, James White had a pretty good day anyway. So if you started James White, regardless of whether Burkhead or Michelle played or not, you probably did pretty well. But the fact is, he gave you suggestions, but he also gave you advice on how to make some adjustments based on things that happened. And so that helped me cash. I actually did remove James White. I had my lineup set after I spoke with Ricky. I basically just slotted them all in. And then as Sunday came along, I did some more research, did some more of my own thinking, evaluated changes in the system. Like, for example, Tevin Coleman, I put him in. That's what Ricky does. That's what he brings to the program, and that's what he's going to be doing with us today. So we're excited about doing that. All of you out there, we have a Facebook page if you want to talk with us. If you have any questions, if you just want to talk fantasy sports during the week, or if you want your questions answered here on the program, you can do that. It's the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show on Facebook. If you want to follow me, I can direct you to wherever you need to go as far as finding Ricky, finding me, finding Daily Roto, finding RotoExperts.com. You can do that on Twitter. At CJMitch73. Let me bring in Ricky Sanders again. He writes for Daily Roto, makes people money. Just purchased himself a nice Mercedes, flashing the whip on Twitter, you know, touting the fact that he goes to Europe for all these vacations. He's buying fancy cars. He's flashing the bling, and there's nothing wrong with that. Follow him on Twitter at RSandersDFS. But let's talk a little bit of fantasy football with him right now. Ricky, thanks again for coming back. I know you're a busy dude, but you're spending 30, 40 minutes with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. And I did want to at least put a damper on my swag with the tweet yesterday. I did acknowledge that it was used, and it does have quite a bit of miles. But for how little I use it, hopefully it'll be useful.
Yeah, I usually like to give the whole picture, but I didn't think I need to get into the weeds and the minutia of the fact that it's used. And the car looks, you know, it looks spiffy, so it doesn't look like it. You know, it's not banged up with bad wheels or like Mustang. I remember when I was in high school, this one girl that I had a crush on, she told me that she just purchased a Mustang, and I couldn't praise her enough because at that time I thought Mustangs were the cat's meow. I have since changed my opinion, but at that time, at least as a 16-year-old or 17-year-old, Mustangs were the cat's meow. It turns out that she had purchased one of those piece of crap Mustangs that looked more like a, you know, like a Volkswagen buggy or something, you know, and then she painted it all these weird, you know, crunchy kind of colors. So I praised her to all ends. And then when I got the facts of the matter, I was like, oh my goodness, I think I'm going to throw up. But anyway, your car looks styling. I had no idea about the miles in either way. I'm going to try to praise you as much as I can. And the car does look nice. If anyone who's seen the picture, I'm not, to be honest, if I can throw a little bit of damper, if I can be a little negative on you, I'm not a white car dude. I like colors. I like, you know, racing black or green or even red if the red is the right color. White isn't my thing, but, no, it still flashes good. The picture on Twitter, at least, was flashing good.
Yeah, and in Chicago, white's not ideal either. It would not have been my first choice, but let's just say the price was right for that one. So it's going to be horrible when the snow starts. You get all that showing. When it's rainy, it's going to show everything. But, hey, it's better than what I used to have.
And you have an excuse. And to be honest, it can add a little bit of personality, a little bit of style. If sometimes a banged up car is kind of cool. Now, granted, we'll see how it looks, you know, in the snow and the rain. We'll be expecting pictures, of course. But you know, you can always paint it. You can always find a way to schmooze something or the right angle. You know, you take the right picture at the right angle. A lot of women look really beautiful if you come exactly from the right angle or the correct lighting or a lot of lighting or however. So there are lots of ways, people. And let's be honest, there's a lot of stupid Americans out here. So we can definitely swing that. We're in 2 weeks. Let me ask you some basic questions. Let's take on the 50,000 feet up in the sky kind of perspective, and then whittle it down to the weeds and really get into the players as we finish up the podcast here. But what are some of your thoughts after 2 weeks? It's early in the season. We talked a little bit about that last week. Is there anything that you've learned or observed through 2 weeks that you're leaning heavily on or that you think is deceptive? Or what are just some general thoughts and impressions from after having 2 weeks as we get closer and closer to week number three?
Yeah, I guess it's just that some of the assets, some of the worst teams are just guys you want to avoid if they're not going to have the ball in a game where time of possession is going to be dominated by a team. If you're going to look like the Cardinals, if you're going to look like the Bills, if you're going to look like the Titans at times, there's just not that much opportunity for fantasy value. So, you know, I know people have liked Larry Fitzgerald. They've liked David Johnson. They've liked Derrick Henry. They've liked guys. I mean, LeSean McCoy has been someone that we've been trying to get some value out of. But with these teams that just don't have the ball and are horrible, I think you just need to fully avoid them. I mean, that's definitely something that I've learned. And then on the opposite side, I mean, those teams that have the ball for basically the entirety of the game keep giving us some fantasy value. I mean, you saw Melvin Gordon with just an absolutely monster game last week. So I think people feel that some of these bad teams are going to give them value in one way or another. You're going to fall into some garbage time. And you're going to get a garbage time hero, but there have been some really poor performances. I think we have a few really bad teams in the NFL right now to the point where you almost just overlook them unless they're playing each other. But if they're playing a team with any semblance of upside, you really can't use too many players from these teams.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the Cardinals and the Bills. They really do look awful. One thing that I noticed when I was writing my column for rotoexperts.com is the Redskins' defense has been good, but it's also faced the fewest plays from scrimmage of any team in the NFL. Is that because the Redskins' offense is possession? Is that because the Redskins' defense is actually good so they get themselves off the field? Or is that a situation of the fact that their opponents maybe weren't good? It's only been 2 weeks, so I don't know how much you determine those things, but do you have some observations on why, for example, the Redskins of all teams would be facing so few offensive plays? And therefore, obviously, if it is because of the Redskins, anyone they're playing is probably fits that example of what you were just talking about, which is they're just not getting enough opportunities to produce no matter how good they are.
Well, one of the reasons is they played the Cardinals, and they got to dominate the time of possession so ridiculously. We kind of talked about it last week that we thought that would be changing a little bit. I mean, in terms of time of possession, for the season, they're at 35, almost 36 minutes, 35-44. Last week, 33-20. So they still did dominate the time of possession against the Colts, who are a respectable team in terms of their time of possession if Andrew Luck can stay healthy. But I think it's mostly Alex Smith. It's just a guy who doesn't make mistakes. He can sustain long drives, and they do it by short passes. So if you think about it that way, I mean, a team like the Chiefs, they're going to throw some long passes down the field. I mean, they're going to try and take the top off with Tyreek and Sammy Watkins, which is going to limit the time of their possessions, but it's going to result in points. So you're completely fine with it from that perspective. I mean, by comparison, Kansas City only 26-41 in terms of average time of possession so far. That's 29th in football. So you can see that, you know, teams with big play threats, sometimes that's going to hurt them in this single category. Doesn't mean they're a bad offense by any means, obviously. I mean, Mahomes is on a historic pace. It's just that it's not the way their offense moves. I mean, Adrian Peterson, kind of a grinded-out guy. Chris Thompson only catches passes in the short field. And you've got a bunch of guys that are, you know, PPR machines, Jordan Reed, Jamison Crowder. It's just not the way the offense is designed, is to take the top off. It's to dink and dunk you to death, and that results in some longer, you know, possessions, and that's, I think, why they're up there. It doesn't necessarily mean they're incredible. It just means they're good at possessing the ball, which is bad if you're targeting, you know, teams against them, especially running backs, just because they don't have a ton of time with the ball.
Yeah, and that is interesting. Like you said, if you're going with the Chiefs, you don't care that their time possession is bad. The Redskins don't really have any weapons to excite you from a fantasy perspective either. So even though they have the ball a lot, you don't necessarily want any of their players because they really – I mean, maybe Chris Thompson, I suppose. If you're going to dink and dunk
right.
and go up and down and do lots of chunk yards, maybe he's the only – is he really the only – maybe Jordan Reed, I suppose, but is Thompson really the only guy that intrigues you because of that one specific benefit, I guess you'd call it?
I mean, it's going to be a week-to-week thing with this team. I don't want to say, you know, overall I'm just going to use this guy because obviously, like, the rest of it is dependent on matchup. This week against Green Bay, it does have a potential to be a bit of a shootout. I mean, obviously, Chris Thompson is my favorite. You look at last week, I mean, he was just ridiculous in the passing game. 14 targets, he caught 13 of them. I think that's going to be the case with him a lot. This might be one of the weeks where you can get the top taken off, though. I mean, Paul Richardson, we haven't really seen what he could do. He got 4 or 6 targets last week. I think I like his upside this week if you're looking for anyone on this team with upside. But Jordan Reed, I mean, he's a stable tight end. There's just – we don't know yet, I don't think, when it comes to this offense because I expected Jamison Crowder to be more involved. He is not. Only 4 targets last week, caught 2 of them, which was really surprising against this Colts defense. It was outperformed where we thought they would be. I mean, they've been really solid through 2 against matchups where I don't think I personally expected them to be solid. So we'll see where it goes against Green Bay. We know their secondary isn't the greatest, but – I think in general, if we're just speaking, you know, for the course of the season, I agree with you on Chris Thompson. I think on a week-to-week basis, Jordan Reed and Paul Richardson are quite intriguing, though.
And is there a team or teams or players that kind of fit both of the molds, whereas the time of possession is in their favor and they have the skill set to benefit from it? Or on the flip side, is there a player that maybe you would normally be excited about, but because maybe the time of possession is low, you're down on him or outright against him? Is there someone who really fits in perfectly? Because like the Chiefs and the Redskins seem to be on the outside edges. Is there a couple of teams or a couple of players that fit perfectly into that groove when it comes to this kind of analysis?
Yeah, I think the Rams are your classic case where they've got such a good play caller where they can hang on to the ball when they need it. But also they've got the personnel and, again, the guy in charge who can kind of take the top off when he needs. I mean, Brandon Cooks' downfield threat is excellent. But when they need to run the ball, Todd Gurley's your guy, and they just do it so well. I mean, I saw a stat this week that Todd Gurley averaging 7.5 rushes per game in the red zone. There's only one player that has more than 7.5 rushes in the red zone for the season besides Gurley. So they really focus on their strengths. Their passing offense is condensed. I mean, it's over 75% of the passes on offense going to their 3 receivers. So we know where the passes are going, and they have the offensive line and just the overall team that really is fitting to where they're going to run a lot of plays, and you're going to get some fantasy value out of it because you know where the ball's going. A lot of it's going to their all-world running back, but the rest is going to their receivers, who, again, this week are way underpriced.
And I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong all the time, that I would assume they're underpriced because there's so many of them. I mean, Cooper Kupp is a pretty good receiver.
Yeah.
Robert Woods has some upside talent. Brandon Cooks, while maybe the expectations are too high, he's a 1,000-yard receiver every single year. Now, granted, he's played for a great quarterback every single year of his career. But is that why they're a bargain? And how do you determine that? Do you just buy them all? Or why do you select one over the other? Because it does look like Gurley's a no-brainer. But the other ones, how do you pick Cooks over Woods or not Kupp, who's going to be cheaper and maybe he's not as good? But how do you make that decision for an offense that has so many weapons?
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, it's kind of dependent on matchup. This week, they face a team that has a pair of corners who have graded really well. I mean, I think Casey Hayward is the one we think over a long period is going to sustain that. Desmond King, on the other side of the ball, he gets Cooper Kupp. He's in the slot. I don't want to say the other side of the field. That's misleading. But in the slot, Desmond King has rated as a pretty solid corner. But it almost doesn't matter because you know you have Sean McVay finding these guys, you know, in space the best that they possibly can. But also, you have Joey Bosa, which I actually think is really relevant to the point where we can get Jared Goff some time, and he's going to find these receivers. I mean, I don't think the Chargers are good enough where we think that we've got Jalen Ramsey spread all across the field. Hayward is very good, but you look at the target share with these guys. Again, as I mentioned, 75% of the team's targets, and they all play a ton of snaps. 133 snaps for Cook so far, 131 for Woods, 133 for Kupp. So they're, like, always on the field. They are mostly a three-wide receiver offense. It's just so conducive to the fantasy environment for these guys. And I'm not sure, you know, a young guy in his second game, I'm ready to say, you know, PFF has graded this guy great through two games, especially when one of them's been against the Bills, that I'm not willing to go there. I think Cooper Kupp at 4,900 in cash games is going to have enough volume, enough snaps, and it's actually going to be a competitive game, so I don't think it's going to be one where they're going to be way up and Gurley's just going to be the guy. And even if they get way up, I expect them to use these guys in the passing game. And even when they're up, I mean, last week, what was it, 27-0, they still threw a decent amount of passes in the second half to where I'm not scared to fully avoid these guys. I think Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods at 4,900 and 5,100 are guys you have to strongly consider in cash games, regardless of what Pro Football Focus says about their individual matchup, because their opportunities are there every single week with all those snaps and all those targets.
And we joked about Jared Goff's price last week being, quote-unquote, being polite, a mistake. Has he proven that price was a mistake? Looking back, was that a mistake? And his price is actually cheaper this week. Is it more reasonable, or at least where I'm looking, it's cheaper? Was it a mistake before, and is the price getting maybe tempting now?
Well, it's getting better, no question, but, like, it still was a mistake. If you look at the offenses we talked about stacking, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, 40 points. Matt Ryan had two rushing touchdowns. He was near 40 points. Patrick Mahomes, 40 points. Blake Bortles, about 35 DraftKings points. So if you basically used anyone but them, oh, Kirk Cousins as well. He had a monster game. I don't remember the overall numbers. I think it was 400 yards, four touchdowns for Kirk Cousins as well. So if you used anyone but them, you were playing from behind, and really you didn't have a chance to win a tournament. So, and almost in cash games too. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger at FanDuel was like 40% owned in cash games. So if you were off the top tier of quarterbacks, at least the top scoring tier, you were doomed. So I don't think I'm going there. I mean, Jared Goff is fine, but because we're talking about Todd Gurley getting almost all the opportunities in the red zone, I prefer just using some of the receivers on a PPR site where I think they can get you 9 for 90, something like that, and be good enough as to where I'd be willing to, you know, risk my week on Jared Goff throwing passing touchdowns when Todd Gurley's touching the ball so goddamn much in the red zone.
Yeah, and like I mentioned last week, I get greedy. I want a lot of production for a very low price at quarterback. It looks like that is absolutely the wrong way to go. I took your advice for most of my lineup last week. Like I said, I made some adjustments based on changes from Thursday to Sunday. But one of the leagues I got extra greedy, and the one league that I didn't cash, I cashed in all of but two, because I did two line, you know, I did multiple lineups in all of the same contests, and the only contests that I didn't cash were the ones where I got extra greedy. You talked about willing to pay up for Antonio Brown, willing to pay up for Julio Jones. I wanted to do that, and with James White, you know, being crowded, even though we ended up having a good game anyway, I took him out, and I wanted to get Michael Thomas into one of my lineups, and he had a big game. So getting him in was good, and I ended up actually getting Tevin Coleman in the lineup as well. But in order to be able to finagle all of that budgeting, I had to take out Ben Roethlisberger. I had to take out Pat Mahomes, which I had in a couple other different lineups, and I put in Nick Foles. Stupid, greedy, trying to get a lot from a little. And because of that, I didn't get the six touchdowns that Roethlisberger and Mahomes were bringing on board. And that alone, Michael Thomas was great. Tevin Coleman was great. But just the fact that I didn't have Goff, I had Goff and didn't have Roethlisberger or Mahomes, that was the difference between cashing and not cashing. So is that what we have to conclude, at least right now, is that you have to pay for the stud quarterbacks no matter what, and then you find other ways? Is that really what we've come to conclude, at least right now, after 2 weeks?
I don't think it's necessarily pay for the studs. It's pay for the guys who project well. For one reason or another. I mean, if you look on DraftKings this week, we have a lot of guys in the the 5,300 to 5,200, so really cheap. I mean, you got a guy like Pat Mahomes at 7K, Rodgers at 7,100. So guys in a pretty reasonably priced tier who all pop in terms of our per dollar rankings. It's just guys who project well you have to go with instead of trying to get cute. Like, for instance, if you scroll down on our daily roto projections, I mean, you could find someone like Derek Carr at 5,400 who's affordable in an okay matchup, but he's not going to be a guy you want to use because I think he's about 20th in terms of our projections, as opposed to guys who are in that similarly priced range who we feel a lot better about. Matt Ryan at 5,700, Deshaun Watson at 6,100. So it's not like you have to spend up a lot. You just need to find the correct per dollar guys with the appropriate ceilings that, you know, they can hit in this matchup. I don't know if you've been watching Derek Carr, if you think that 400 yards and four touchdowns is a really I guess it's not necessarily likely for anyone other than Patrick Mahomes, but if it's overly probable here that he can get you there compared to some of the other guys that we have, you know, ranked a lot higher.
And that being said, risk versus reward. Does that mean, as exciting as Fitzmagic has been, you're staying away? Because his price is getting closer and closer to one of those top guys. If he performs like he has in the first 2 weeks, it's worth it. But, you know, and he's got a good matchup against Pittsburgh. At least I consider it a good matchup after what we saw last week. Are you jumping on the Fitzpatrick bandwagon? Again, he's cheaper than the elite guys, but he's getting up there he's not exactly a bargain.
The good news is you only have to consider him on the Thursday to Monday slates because he plays on Monday. So you really, you know, for DFS purposes, unless you're playing the one gamer, don't have to overthink it because it's not included. But against the Steelers team that keeps playing, I mean, they're kind of like the other Kansas City, where their defense isn't good and their offense is really good. So you think there's going to be a lot of, you know, fast-paced, high-scoring games, and we saw it. I mean, the two of them last week, what did they combine for, 85 points, something like that? I mean, I think any quarterback facing the Steelers at this point is viable. Someone playing as well as Fitzpatrick, I don't think I would count him out regardless of what his price is at the moment. Let's put it that way.
So since we're actually talking about quarterbacks, even though we're going to cover a couple topics and then get into the player picks, since we're talking QBs, who are the big-time guys that you project well that are worth the money? And if you're going to go a little cheaper but still get a guy who you think is going to project well, give me some names here.
Yeah, it kind of depends on your site because of the pricing. But let's go with DraftKings because that's mostly what I play, and I think that's a lot of what people play for cash. I guess we can touch on FanDuel too. But it's the backup backs this week who really make sense for value purposes. And our wide receivers are the ones kind of differentiating themselves from the field. To us, this is a week where you want to spend up in cash for some of these wide receivers. I mean, Julio Jones and Michael Thomas are by far our best values at the position, and they play each other in a dome. So we really feel good about the potential for this to turn into a shootout. And Julio Jones, we have projected for a week high, 32.3% of the market share targets and 35.5% of the touchdowns for this matchup, which if you looked at it last week, this is a big improvement. We feel really good against the Saints that he's going to get a larger look here. And that's a lot to do with no Devontae Freeman and having seen it for a week. And, I mean, this team has been relying heavily on Matt Ryan's legs in the red zone so far. We don't think that's going to continue. I mean, that was an anomaly for last week, which means we think Julio Jones is going to start to see a touchdown positive regression for him. So we really like him. And, I mean, the team totals in this game, both incredibly high. Michael Thomas is going to cost you a pretty penny. But, again, there's multiple running backs that are going to be cheap. Who we think you can build around, regardless, or depending on some of the other injury situations, there may even be another. But I think a lot of people, especially if Jay Ajayi is out, are going to build around these two values that we can get to.
So if you're going to spend up on the wide receivers, you like Thomas and Jones, is there anyone else, or are those the two, and we can move on?
Those are the two for cash games. Again, we talked about the cheap guys being the Rams guys. Those are my favorites. I think if you don't want to spend up, Nelson Agholor, if there's no Alshon Jeffrey, is certainly an intriguing proposition. I mean, he saw a full target share last week. He scored. He was a guy that I was way on basically from the beginning of the week. He was a guy who was featured in my tournament my tournament piece, which I'm going to write again this week and may actually write him up for a second consecutive week. So he's not in the same price range as the guys I'd spend up on. I like Thielen this week, I think, over Stephon Diggs against Buffalo, but they're both certainly good values. I talked about how, you know, they're going to dominate time of possession. You may see more Cook this week, but Thielen's a guy who sees a full target share from week to week. We have him projected at 27% of the market share of targets. So if I'm not spending up for two of the elites, I think Thielen would be the guy to pivot to. Aguilar would be the guy in the mid-tier. But for the most part, I mean, our wide receiver ranks are dominated by those top two guys.
Any true sleepers where you're trying, again, you're trying to squeeze some guys into your budget, so you have to go real low? Any real low guys that you like or think might be worth it?
If Fournette didn't play, let's see if he's coming in. I did like some of these Jacksonville guys, so I'm not in love with that. I actually kind of like Devin Funchess this week. Assuming he doesn't get the matchup against William Jackson, I have to look more into that. But I was actually about to get to the shadow stuff before we hopped on. But I think one of these receivers here is going to be productive. I'm just not sold yet if it's going to be Funchess, if it's going to be Torrey Smith. And PFF has Funchess against Jackson, which is not ideal. But Cam Newton is one of my top values for the week at quarterback. He's just underpriced. And if I'm using him in tournaments, I do want to pair him with a pass catcher. I just haven't decided which one yet. I know they said that DJ Moore's snaps were supposed to improve, but he just caught one pass last week, so I don't think you can go with him. Jairus Wright they've been using out of the slot. I'm undecided which Carolina pass catcher I'm going to use. Obviously Christian McCaffrey, but I know there's going to be one. I think there'll probably be one featured in my article tomorrow once I get to that part of the analysis. In terms of other receivers kind of lower, I mean, I think Jamison Crowder, who we kind of talked about, him and Paul Richardson are interesting to me. Crowder ranks higher in terms of our per dollar value, but you know, we saw four targets last week. I mean, he hasn't really had that connection with Alex Smith yet, so it's kind of a leap of faith. And playing a Green Bay team that we saw last week, you know, allow some big plays down the field, I think Paul Richardson might fit that skill set better. So, I mean, we did touch on him kind of, but if you looked at, you know, Diggs and Thielen consistently seeing targets down the field last week, I think that has to make you feel pretty good about Richardson.
Yeah, I've actually liked him in yearly leagues as well. I've mentioned him in my column last week as the trends are noteworthy ones. So Richardson's definitely an interesting guy there. Let's step back at you covered the wide receivers. Who are the quarterbacks? You mentioned that you like Newton for being underpriced. You mentioned who
yep.
you like for the elite guys. If you're going to pay for the elite guys, give me a couple of the guys that you're suggesting. I mean, you like a few of them. Who do you like from the elite guys? And other than Newton, is there a more bargain guy that you might be that you're on as well?
I mean, in terms of the elite, it's Patrick Mahomes. I think that's the guy you have to go with at this point. Over 30 implied points for their team. Low-key has done a decent amount of running, too. I mean, almost 40 rushing yards through two games. So there's been a lot to like there. San Francisco, another game that looks like it's going to be a shootout. I don't know how you don't go back to the well with him if you have the money, especially for cash games. But the cheap guys we like are Matt Ryan against New Orleans with the high total and Deshaun Watson. I mean, he kind of showed up in the second half last week. He was pathetic for a little bit. But he's kind of priced in the middle of the road. The Giants have allowed 87 rushing yards in the first two games to quarterbacks, so this might be a good game for him to get out of the pocket and get you those extra fantasy points that we love. And strangely, there's like no pass rush for this Giants team. I guess it's not that strange. They didn't have a sack in the preseason, but very little pass rush in the first two games, and Watson playing behind the worst offensive line, at least one of the bottom two, in all of the NFL. So when there's not guys in his face, that's when he can succeed. We saw it last week against the Texans. This pass rush is even worse. The team total just shy of 24 points. But, I mean, Eli, they've been struggling to kind of control the ball as well. So if you can give Watson, this team, a decent amount of the market share of time of possession, like, I feel pretty good about him, and so do our projections. Third in our projections on per dollar this week.
And you mentioned only for the expensive ones that you love Mahomes. Cousins has a great matchup, and you actually like his receivers. Tom Brady, it looks like, has a really good matchup against Detroit. Is it that you don't necessarily – is it that you like those guys, but their prices are maybe fair rather than a good one? Or because it seems like the only expensive guy that you really are excited about is Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, Carson Wentz against Indy, I don't believe in Indy as much as They've shown the problem is I would have liked Alshon Jeffrey back. It doesn't look like he's trending that way, but if Corey Clement's the guy, I think they focus a little bit less on the run. And, I mean, that'll improve Zach Ertz against a Colts defense that's been susceptible to tight ends since the beginning of last year. I think Aguilar will see a solid, you know, market share of the targets. He's a guy who does run 13.1%. We have him projected for the market share of rushes. So Carson Wentz is kind of in the middle. But I think Aaron Rodgers is the direct alternative. I mean, he's kind of hurting right now. So I actually don't think people will be overly enthused to roster him. But he's still Aaron Rodgers, and this Washington team, they've dominated time of possession in the other games. They probably will have the ball a decent amount here. But, I mean, they did trade Kendall Fuller to get quarterback. I know they still have some pretty decent corners there, but I'm just waiting for that Aaron Rodgers breakout game. And because their time of possession has been so good, their defense, I think, looks better on paper than it is. And Aaron Rodgers is 100 more than Mahomes, so I don't think people are going to go there. But like an Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, or even Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, Geronimo Allison stack is something that really interests me this week that I think is going to be, for some reason, like 4 or 5% owned.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking at fantasy draft, and Mahomes is actually more expensive than Rodgers, but they're in the same ballpark. That's intriguing. All right, let's transition over. You mentioned the running backs, a lot of good values this week. Let's start there. Who do you like from a value perspective at the running backs? So it looks like this week, at least, let me sum it up and we can just come to the conclusion. You pay up because you have to get production at the quarterbacks, but you actually like a few of the more affordable ones. You're paying up for the wide receivers. You've got a few of the value guys. So running back is where you're going cheap this week, even though you were glossy happy about Gurley. You're still saying maybe go bargain it at running back in order to afford all the other stuff?
Well, it depends on the site. I mean, like FanDuel, it's pretty easy to get to a top back. Fantasy draft, it's always easy to get to a top back. So I would never suggest going, you know, with more than a few cheap guys there. But, yeah, I mean, Gurley's the guy I want to spend up for if you can get there. This Chargers defense has been susceptible to the run since the beginning of last year. Gurley seeing all those – I mean, we don't have to go into that. But – the cheap guys are Giovanni Bernard and Corey Clement, assuming we get Noah Jai. And I think both of those are guys you just need to lock into your cash games. I mean, Bernard, there certainly is a case for him to be faded in tournaments. They're talking about the number two back getting a decent amount of work, which should scare you a little. But Bernard's a pretty good receiver. Carolina plays some zone. They'll sit back. So I do think that Bernard will be active in the passing game enough to get you to value. And then Corey Clement, I mean, every time he's seen a decent workload, he has succeeded. I know that, you know, it could be a committee, but Scrolls has been hurting. Ajayi might not play. This could prove to be the Corey Clement show. And even if you get Corey Clement and Darren Scrolls, like, I think he's going to be the goal line back. I think there's going to be enough there that both these guys are completely viable cash game plays. The question is, in tournaments, do you want to pivot from them? I think there's a case to be made for pivoting from both. But if there's, you know, if that Philly backfield is just Clement, I think the stronger case is going to be pivoting off of Giovanni Bernard.
Saquon Barkley is an expensive guy. Depending on what site, he's up in the top five anyway. But I was just shocked at how much of the offense he was last week for the Giants. And everyone was bitching and moaning about how bad Eli was. The beneficiary looks like Barkley. You're talking about market shares and percentage of performance. Barkley was targeted, what, 19 times in the passing game, and he rushed like 16 or 17 times. Does that make him a guy that you have to go with? Houston's defense doesn't scare you to death, right? But what are your thoughts on his price versus all of that opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, he's been – I mean, if we redrafted today, I think he would be the number two pick.
I couldn't believe how much targets – I mean, that many targets in the passing game. Granted, some running backs get a lot, but – I just couldn't believe – I mean, you've got Odell Beckham and Ingram on that offense, and yet Barkley got all of those targets in the passing game. It's one thing to get a lot. It just seemed like another thing to just be a target whore. He was a whore last week.
Yeah, and David Johnson in an offense that's underperforming, Le'Veon Bell holding out. Like, I think this is arguably the second-best running back in fantasy football already, which is crazy because the offense sucks. But also crazy because he's a rookie But he is so talented. And, I mean, this matchup, Houston third in rushing DVOA so far. But DVOA, we've learned, isn't incredibly predictive. I like using it as kind of a benchmark. But a guy like Barkley, I mean, who should be targeted, like we mentioned, in the passing game, I mean, that adds another element that DVOA flat out doesn't, you know, consider when looking at rushing. And they're 18th in DVOA against the running back so far, 42.5 yards per game in the passing game for backs. So, yeah, I think Barkley is a very legitimate alternative any given week these days. He's explosive enough that he can break one. He can see enough targets to get you where you need to be. I don't think until further notice I'm going to be against rostering Saquon Barkley, especially in tournaments. Houston looks like a decent run defense, I'm not going to lie to you, but there are still so many ways he can get it done, and if they get in the red zone, I think he'll get his shots. Saquon Barkley is an excellent tournament play this week.
Who are your favorite plays at running back, either expensive or values?
I think I'm going back to the well with Tevin Coleman against the Orleans in a game that I think should be pretty high. Edo Smith, not really eating into the workload a lot. I mean, I think he had 9 carries last week. Tevin Coleman still 50% of the they did have Matt Ryan run a few in, which kind of, you know, limited his ceiling. They also had a few end arounds that kind of ate into his overall, you know, percentage of market share. But I like the matchup again. He's not expensive. And I think if you're talking about last week, you know, James White being the guy in the passing game against Jacksonville, how about Deion Lewis this week for the same reason? I think Jacksonville gets out ahead. Deion Lewis clearly the better back for that role in terms of his pass-catching ability. I think if they're playing from behind, you know, 5K Deion Lewis on DraftKings could really eat up the targets kind of like James White did last week. I don't know if we're going to expect, you know, double-digit catches, but at that price point, if you could get, you know, 6 for 60 in the passing game, anything that he does in the running game will be pretty much gravy. And, I mean, if he breaks one, we know he's explosive. Or if he gets a goal line carry, all of a sudden you're talking about a really, really strong value.
Yeah, I was excited by the fact that Lewis got more touches than Henry in week one. But then I was kind of disheartened by the fact that Henry got more touches than Lewis in week two. I think Lewis is a better all-around back. So I think he should be the main guy no matter what. But yep. You know, that's not – you know, we don't get to tell Mike Vrabel what to do. is that concerning at all, the fact that it seems like they haven't forgotten about Henry? They haven't decided Lewis is a guy, or at least we don't know yet. Does that concern you at all?
No, I think it's game flow dependent, and I think they'll be playing from behind here against a really strong team, one of the, I think, best three teams in all the NFL, especially if Bortles continues to play this way. So I think the game flow is going to lead to them going to Lewis by default. So I'm not overly concerned with this matchup. Over the long run, yeah, it concerns me, but if I think I have a good feel on predicting the game flow, I'm going to roll with that back.
And I hate to have to talk about tight ends, but it is a position and they do cost some money. Who are the, are you paying up for the good guys, or are there some values that you like at that position?
Well, I'm watching this Jack Doyle injury because I did like him, but I would like Ebron more if he were to sit against Philly. A very good defense, but one of the few places where they are susceptible is to that tight end spot. I mean, they've got a few really good cover linebackers. But I think with two tight ends, that's going to spread them out enough. And with one tight end, I mean, there's just enough concentration that I still feel reasonably good about it. But Travis Kelce is the cream of the crop for us against San Francisco. Two touchdowns last week. That offense is excellent. Most of their games are shootouts. We just think it's going to be, you know, enough volume available. And then George Kittle. I mean, I would go back to the well with him in a game that, again, like every Kansas City game, we're going to project to be shootouts. Kittle didn't get his last week, but the tight end still scored, Garrett Celek. I think it's a rebound week for him. So it's really the tight ends in that game are the focus for us. And I think both have monster ceilings to the point where I'm not going to differentiate that much at tight end this week. I think the other guy is Zach Ertz with his boy Carson Wentz back. He's the really sneaky one of the three. But, like, I'm not punting the position because there's legitimate upside from guys in this mid-tier. And I would not be shocked if we rebound with another, you know, 90-plus yard week from George Kittle here or, like, 100 yards and a touchdown from Kelce. So I know a lot of people like to punt it because they're really cheap. But I'd rather just go with the cheap backs and get me a guy who could, you know, single-handedly push me into cash at this position.
Yeah, that was one of my regrets as well, is switching from a legitimate quarterback to Foles. And I originally had Kelce in my lineup. I thought that that bad week one was going to not only maybe drive down his ownership numbers, but that I just thought he was going to, you know, sometimes you see that where a guy is ignored one week and they go crazy to make sure he's occupied and gets all his touches the next one. And it turned out that he had a really good week. So that was one of my regrets, is that he was in my lineup. And then to fit all my budgetary needs in there and to get Michael Thomas in the lineup and Antonio Brown, I ended up removing Kelce. And it didn't cost me in most of my lineups, but it may have cost me in the Foles one. So you got
right.
Just to clarify, you liked Ebron if Doyle doesn't play, right? Because obviously
correct.
One guy instead of two. But you talk about how good the linebackers were in coverage, and if there's only one tight end, they can focus a little. Okay, so Ebron's value is significantly better without Doyle, even though it spreads out the
yes.
D. That's what you're saying?
Yeah.
Because normally
yeah,
that's
I
the
like
case.
It better.
Yeah.
Right. I just like it better that I can project him with some targets. I mean, Doyle is cheap enough where if they're both playing, you could try and go there. He's seen a larger share of the targets between the two of them, and he's really cheap. So for that reason, I'm completely okay with him. But I would prefer there just be one guy, even against these backers. Like, I think Ebron's talented enough that he could beat them. So, like, I guess Doyle, if I needed a punt tight end for the moment, Austin Hooper is the other guy, who just guys I think can fall into by accident. But really, if I have the salary, I want to spend up here.
Talking with Ricky Sanders from DailyRoto.com. You can follow him on Twitter, rsandersdfs. I'm Chris Mitchell, your host. You can follow me on Twitter, at cjmitch73. We pretty much covered all of the different – when it comes to defenses, do you value them? Do you care about them?
Yes.
Do you actually – How do you go about deciding what defense you want to play?
I mean, the one that's facing Buffalo, that's basically what it's come to. They're so awful. And this week, it really depends on our projections. If our projections are really close on most of the defenses in the field, then I feel comfortable punting. This is not one of those weeks. I mean, Minnesota is a full 2 points projected higher than the next defense. They're expensive. But I really just expect them to go off this week. Like, the only other defense I feel decent about is the Bears against Arizona with Khalil Mack against a standstill Sam Bradford. So, like, if you have to pivot, sure, go ahead there. I mean, the Jaguars are a decent bargain against the Titans, especially if there's no Mariota. But I really want to get to Minnesota this week in cash games, even in tournaments. I wouldn't be shocked if we're talking about a 25 fantasy point defense this week. If you go cheap at defense, it's really a concern this week that you could be drawing dead. So this is not one of those weeks like last week. I was willing to go to the Titans. They were pretty good for, I think it was $2,400 on DraftKings. They were featured in all my best lineups. But this is not one of those weeks. I am really, really scared to not use this Minnesota team.
So let me just get you officially on the record so that we're prepared for the congressional hearings. You, as a fantasy expert, are saying that the Vikings are a must-own. Is that what you're saying? A defense, namely from Minnesota, called the Vikings, are a must-own. You're on the record for this? So when we meet in front of Congress, that's right out there for someone to use? Is that correct?
In cash games, Minnesota is a must-own. Correct. I would not feel comfortable with any other defense in cash games. I would go so far as to say that I think one of these three defenses wins you $1 million this week. Philadelphia, Minnesota, or Chicago. I don't even know if there's another defense that I have too much interest in. These guys just project so well. You're going to need volatility at defense always, but the pass rushes of these teams against the teams that they're facing and the offensive lines that they're facing, good night.
So you're doubling down. Are you actually saying that if you don't own either the Vikings, the Bears, or the Eagles, you will not be able to win the $1 million? That's just – it doesn't matter what you do for the rest of the lineup. If you're one of those close guys at the end for the million, you absolutely will have – this will be the difference maker. The Vikings, the Bears, the Eagles will decide whether you win $1 million or you don't. That's a pretty strong statement. I'm overdoing it, but I actually love defenses. I love them in fantasy, even though they're annoying and relatively pointless. But nonetheless, that's – you know, Luke, the difference between $1 million or not based on a defense, that's interesting.
A lot of weeks it is based on the defense, and people don't take it into too much consideration. But, I mean, you have a similar lineup to someone else, and you spend similar on the defense, and they get 20 points from their defense, you get 10. There's no catching them.
Yep, and also defensive prices are relatively close. You know, the difference between a Gronk and a cheap tight end can be a lot of money. the difference between the best and the worst on defense, for the most part, really isn't, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's like $600, which certainly in offense is tough to find sometimes. This week is no different. But, I mean, this is a week where we feel like some of these defenses are really high upside. So, of course, you could always get lucky with one that falls into a pick six, recovers a fumble for a touchdown, maybe even does it twice at the lower tier. Like, I'm not saying you can't play any of them. I just am saying that I personally am really scared to avoid this tier of defense.
Yep. All right, let's wrap it up with the final parts here. We've talked about who you like. We've gone over a lot of it, but let's actually put you on the record. Who are your best value plays this week? The best value plays. Not necessarily the most productive, but how much you expect them to produce based on what they cost. Give me some of your best values, and then we'll go to some of your worst prices.
I think Cooper Kupp's my guy in terms of wide receiver, who is going to be on a per-dollar basis. Really strong this week. Our ranks like Robert Woods too, but I think I am on top personally. I just like the PPR potential for him for you in cash games. You need to lock up some value at the wide receiver position. He's one of the few guys I feel pretty good about. I also feel pretty good about, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but Larry Fitzgerald. We didn't get to him in terms of wide receivers, but it's because he's a DraftKings specific play. He's actually way more expensive on, I think, Fantasy Draft and FanDuel than he is there. But if you think about it, this Bears pass rush, I mean, Khalil Mack's going to be getting to Bradford soon. So if they're going to complete any passes, it's likely going to be in the short field. And I think Fitzgerald on DraftKings is a guy that's going to go overlooked because the team has been so awful. But I think at 5,400, certainly can get you, you know, 7 for 70. So we didn't talk about him, but I think those are my two receivers. We talked about the backs. I mean, everyone's going to be on Corey Clement. Everyone's going to be on Bernard. But I think Deion Lewis playing that James White role is another guy for me. And then at the tight end, we talked about Kelsey. I think Kittle let people down last week. But on a per-dollar basis, you know, comparatively to Kelsey, I'm right back on the Kittle bandwagon. I still feel like this is a guy who's a tight end one this year. The air yards weren't there last week like they were in the first week. But in a shootout like this, I think there's going to be plenty of opportunities. So do not be afraid to go back to Kittle, who burned you the week before. I don't think he'll be burning you in two straights.
You haven't talked about Garoppolo, and he is, if you're going to go a little bit cheaper, he is a little bit cheaper than those top guys. Are you at all on Garoppolo in a game that you seem to believe is going to be high scoring? He's definitely cheaper than some of those other quarterbacks, but is that too risky? Is that why you haven't even mentioned him?
I mean, he's in that next tier, no question. I mean, last week it worked where in that high game you went with a team with a slightly lower, I think it was Pittsburgh favorite, I don't remember. But anyways, in that shootout game with Kansas City, you go with the lower-owned quarterback, and that paid off. It could be the strategy again this week. Like, I don't want to completely write off Garoppolo. He's just about 10th in our values at quarterback. So he's a little bit out there, but I mean, you look at Blake Bortles against Tennessee. I don't necessarily think that's going to be a high-scoring game. I actually really like Leonard Fournette in tournaments there. I think he's going to get a full workload if he returns against a bad Tennessee team. So, like, Bortles I really liked last week without Fournette, not there this week. Yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, going off our top, you know, going way beyond our top five, I think Garoppolo is clearly the highest single upside play of the bunch. He's a reasonably priced, and everyone against Kansas City is getting theirs right now. That defense, I mean, even with Fuller, just not good at all. So, yeah, if you're using Kittle, I mean, I think with Garoppolo in a game with this potential high scoring, you're going to use two of his pass catchers if you're using him. I think Marquise Goodwin, if he suits up, is the other guy.
So if I have a moment of weakness and I try to afford something else, instead of going to Nick Foles, you're saying I should go to Garoppolo, right? So if I have that moment of weakness, I just can't overcome the craving. Garoppolo's the guy that I should settle on?
Oh, yeah, it makes way more sense for Garoppolo when you think of the way this game is likely going to go with two bad defenses. Wouldn't be surprised if you get two scores in the 30s again. So, you know, you look at Foles. I don't know if we ever could project him for like a lock to be 30 points. Thankfully, it's Wentz this week. We don't have to think about it. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of game flow, you're not going to get better than this game.
And just to clarify about the expensive guys, the guys that are expensive but worth it, you said Gurley, Mahomes, and Jones, and I believe Thomas Is there anyone else
yep.
on the high end that you that are worth the, every dollar and you should go out and get them?
Well, Kelsey would be the other guy, and I think Zach Ertz at the tight end too. I mean, with Wentz back, I feel really strong about the guys in the high tier at tight end. So, yeah, I mean, I like paying up at tight end at those top two receivers. Todd Gurley is certainly the guy. And then there's some, you know, running back, I think there's a lot of values. Like, even Leonard Fournette, who we just mentioned, is significantly cheaper than the top tier because he was hurt last week. And when he's healthy, he's basically a lock for 25 touches. So, you know, if you can get that at, in terms of value as opposed to having to go with, like, a wide receiver three instead of Michael Thomas, give me all the Fournette.
And to flip the coin in the part where I like, which is hating on things, the worst prices. Who are the guys that you don't project to be quite as good as maybe some people think, and they're also the price point just isn't right?
Well, let me scroll down here. How about Eli Manning against that Houston pass rush? We have no interest in him. Dak Prescott against Seattle, still no receivers. Even Andy Dalton, we don't really love this week against Carolina. I know they play a lot of zone, but 5,700, I mean, he's the same price point as Matt Ryan. There's no way in hell I would be playing him there. At the running back position, let's see, look at, we're off Philip Lindsay and those Denver backs this week against Baltimore. I mean, Lindsay, I think in back-to-back weeks, has been in the millionaire-making lineup. We don't think it's going to be three, so you don't have to go there. Same thing with the backs for Baltimore. We just don't like that game flow. Baltimore, Denver, Alex Collins, Allen, meh, a whole bunch of meh. Going to wide receivers, I don't know if I agree with our ranks here, so I won't even go there. The receivers from that game, too. How about let's go with that. Emmanuel Sanders, one of our lowest-rated values of the week because he's 6,400 and Baltimore. Again, just looks like a tough pass defense. So specifically Sanders, if you're looking for a guy in tournaments, we recommend going the other way and going with Thomas this week.
All right. Ricky Sanders from Daily Roto at R. Sanders DFS. Again, you have to be going with Daily Roto. The money that he makes you on all the suggestions on Daily Roto by far and away make it worth the subscription. Ignoring the fact that you should just like being informed, you can actually translate the expense you pay there to the profit in your wallet. So you got to be going over to Daily Roto and hooking up with Ricky and following him on Twitter. Anything I'm missing? Anything you need to tell us? Real quickly for you, the matchups. It's only been 2 weeks. I keep saying this. It's like a broken record. But are there any matchups that you come to the conclusion and say, you know, like, for example, any defense against the Bills you love? That's what I'm talking about. Are there any matchups
yeah.
from a defensive perspective that you're running scared from already after 2 weeks? And are there any defenses specifically that you've already decided you're absolutely running to? I think you've covered some of it, but just so we get you on the record.
Well, I mean, the only thing that I'm like really sold on is in terms of that I would run from is like still these Jacksonville corners are insane. It's really tough to trust, especially any outside receivers against this Jacksonville team. You've got to kind of look for other ways to attack this defense, which is why I like Deion Lewis, which is why I like James White last week. I mean, every once in a while we'll like a tight end, but this Jacksonville defense is so strong that I'm still a believer in them. There's still a lot to be written with most other teams. I mean, against the Bears, I'm worried about someone like a Sam Bradford who's stuck in the pocket, can't move against them, kind of like Aaron Rodgers was, but Rodgers had that monster second half. So even that might be overthinking it, but I don't know. I mean, like in terms of bad, I think we know bad because the offense is bad. Defense is bad. It's just a bad situation for Arizona and Buffalo. In terms of the good, I think we need to wait and see with a lot of things. Like we mentioned, Washington had that outlier game with time of possession. There's other teams. I mean, like the Chargers had an outlier game in terms of time of possession. So I want to wait for about 4 weeks before I make too many judgments that are significant. Obviously, we've seen some things, but it's not a big enough sample for the most part. So I know the terrible, the bottom two defenses. I think I know defense, but besides that, I don't feel like I know that much.
Yeah, I think about that when it comes to the Chiefs. They've had a couple really tough matchups, and while I'm not expecting them to be the best defense in football, I'm not expecting you to want to stack against them every single week, which is sort of what you're saying with the
yeah.
bottom. I don't see them as being that bad, even though right now they kind of do look that way.
Well, I mean, with top offenses, I definitely want to use against them. But, yeah, it's not like if we had the Cardinals against them that I would be on the Sam Bradford Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk, triple stack or anything like that. Right now, if you get some high-powered offenses against them, I know their defense is bad enough that I want to go there, but I'm not ready to call them, like, the worst defense in the NFL.
Right. I'm expecting them to be middle of the pack rather than just abysmal, which at the moment they kind of look like they are. Yeah.
Right.
All right, that's Ricky Sanders. Ricky, thanks a lot. I appreciate you putting in all the time. I'm going to load up these lineups. I'll send my commission over to you. If you had, if this was the end of the season, if you had waited to buy your car in a few more weeks, I could have sent over those commissions. Maybe you could have got a car with, you know, 15 to 20% less mileage, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'll book a flight to China with you, you know, if you keep doing these numbers. But I appreciate you taking the time. It's always good to talk to you. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right, again, that's Ricky Sanders from Daily Roto. I have to apologize. I have been overly friendly to him. I usually don't even come close to kissing anybody's ass. But Ricky, I've known him for a while, always knows what he's doing, love talking with him. And the fact that he actually is helping me win money just makes me that much more happy to compliment him. So if you're not following him on Twitter, at rsandersdfs, then there's something wrong. Because if daily fantasy or just fantasy in general matters to you, Ricky definitely knows what he's doing. And when I say he's one of the best in the business, that's not an exaggeration. He actually is. Why he comes on the show and talks to me, the jerk of all jerks, is beyond me. But nonetheless, we appreciate that he does, and hopefully he'll keep coming on as often as we can. And we'll try to make these shows a little bit quicker. I know one of my guests, they keep coming on, but they get pissed off because I just never shut up. A problem my family complains about as well. But anyway, that's the podcast for today. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Week 3 is going to be another big one. Hopefully you're going to be cashing. Hopefully you're going to be talking more with us fantasy-wise. Hopefully you'll want to start following us on Facebook as well. It's the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show on Facebook. We have that group. I take your questions. I answer your stardom, sit-ems, and trade questions from a fantasy perspective. I give my opinions on daily, and obviously I give you links to all of the podcasts. So if you want to listen to the people who know what they're doing in fantasy, they come on here. Again, it's a mystery to me. For those of you out there who listen, you probably don't know why they're coming on listening to me, but they do. Somehow I'm able to get good guests who know what they're doing that can actually help you. It's a mystery. I'm not paying these people. I don't have hidden pictures or some kind of blackmail material that gets them to come on. For some reason, when I ask these people to come on, they're happy to come on. And you know, that is something that I appreciate very, very much. It's not easy. These people come on, they use their time to come on here when they don't have to. Ricky Sanders is not paid by me. He's not obligated to come here. And yet, 2 weeks in a row, he's come on, and hopefully he'll keep coming week after week. Because as long as he doesn't lose me money, he is more than welcome to come on. All right, everybody, follow me on Twitter. If you want some commentary, you want some fantasy sports stuff, or if you just want to know who to talk to or who to follow in order to help you talk to people who actually know what they're talking about, I can direct you that way as well. Because I do know a lot of people who know a lot about fantasy sports. That's one thing I can definitely brag about. So follow me on Twitter, at CJMitch73. You can read my articles over at rotoexperts.com. My trending and noteworthies article is going to be posted sometime this afternoon. I got a couple things I need to do here in the next couple of hours, but I'm hoping the goal is to have it published by Wednesday. I'm a little bit behind this week, but I'm hoping to have it published today. The article is 95% written. It just needs to be organized and polished up. So if you want to know about what's trending, what's noteworthy from a fantasy perspective, that's what I'm writing this week. That's what I write every single week, and that's what you'll be able to find. It'll probably end up posting tomorrow because, again, I'm not going to post it until sometime later today or this evening. It needs to be edited, fixed up a little bit, you know, polished by the editors. And then it's tossed up on the website over at rotoexperts.com. So probably won't be able to do a lot of help for you for the Thursday night game, but, you know, Jets-Browns. there's not a lot to talk about there, though. There are a lot of targets to be discussing. There are a few players I like from the Jets, which is painful to say. But anyway, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for coming on. Thank you, Ricky Sanders. And if you want to talk about if you want to listen to our podcast on the weekly situations, I had Brandon C. Williams on my program last night. We did a game-by-game breakdown of the entire slate for week number 3. So if you want to know the fantasy analysis of every single game, it's a little bit of a long podcast, but we cover every single game from the Thursday nighter right through the Monday nighter. We look at the matchups, the stardom sit-ems, the good and the bads. We break down every single game. So if you want that kind of in-depth analysis and commentary, I think you do. I mean, everybody has players on every single team, essentially, in this day and age. Follow me on Twitter, and you can get the links to that podcast as well. So that drops Wednesday nights at 9 o'clock. Then I do a Thursday afternoon with Ricky. That's right now the football podcast schedule. Wednesday nights, we do the game-by-game breakdown. Thursdays we do the DFS Daily Fantasy with Ricky Sanders. And if Ricky can't come on, I'm hoping he can direct me to another guy who has about as good of a reputation as his. So hopefully you'll tune in for both of those podcasts every single week. I was nominated for awards last year. If you guys are going to be – you guys and some women want to listen in and help out, we'd appreciate it as well. So thanks, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. Good luck. And again, if you want to talk on Facebook, I'll help there as well. The Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. Get the questions in there. We actually take them on Wednesdays, but I answer them all weekend long. And by Sunday, 1 o'clock, I try to answer every single stardom system question I can get to. So the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show on Facebook. Thanks, everybody.